Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 31 of All Your Base Podcast. I'm Cheese and Beans, and you can find me on Twitter at JimmyTwoTimes.
And I'm Nefirian, and you can find me on Twitter at Nefirian.
You can also get in touch with us on Twitter, to the show at AYB Podcast on Twitter, or you can email us at AYBpodcast@gmail.com. I had a bit of a mind blank there, mate.
You can send a postcard if you want to. I don't think
you
want to
get old
school
anymore. Answer on a postcard.
So
been a bit of an interesting week. Let's start the show off by sort of, I guess, finding out what each other have been playing, mate. So what have you been playing this week, buddy?
What haven't I been playing is more appropriate. I've been playing Titanfall quite a bit.
Nice.
Purely because I got into the EA Access on Xbox Live, and so I've been hitting that up. I've done about 15 hours on that, I think. I played the PGA Tour demo, and I quite liked it. It got slated in the reviews because they cut a lot of content from, I don't know if you remember, Tiger Woods games from like 2002, I think, or something like that. You had loads of courses, you had all this additional content. Well, EA have cut it all back, but so they got hammered for that, and it's quite threadbare, but I just enjoy playing the game, so I'm not really that bothered. I mean, you know, you've only got 12 golfers, I think, whereas in the Tiger Woods one you had 40 or something crazy.
Yeah, it's a big roster before, yeah. I mean, what that does though, it gives them scope maybe to add stuff with, you know, with DLC and stuff. Whether that's free or knowing EA, that'll be, you know, paid for. But it gives it sort of scope for them to kind of add stuff to it, I guess, doesn't it?
They are actually adding a few free courses. They have said that they'll be adding those for free. So Augusta, which is, I think, the big one in America, they haven't got the license for that, therefore they can't use it in the game, which is kind of bizarre.
It is a bit, because it's the license name on there is kind of, you know, Rory McIlroy, but you'd have thought that the PGA would be behind it. So strange how that's come about.
Because really, it should be Spieth on there, because he's the man of the moment at the moment.
He is at the minute. He's not injuring himself playing football, is he?
He's not even in the Open. Which is quite ironic.
Yeah.
Tiger Woods injured himself playing football. They could have kept him on the cover.
Oh, controversial. Controversial. I think Tiger, I mean, he's a fantastic golfer, has been for years, but I just think, you know, a lot of people, a lot of brands and things have kind of distanced themselves from him. You know, he's become a bit of a controversial character, in recent years. He needs to maybe just get back to playing his golf.
If you start teeing off with hookers, what do you expect? It's kind of like, you know, the problem is, you are the brand, aren't you? The person.
Definitely.
You know, so if someone's going to stick Pepsi or whoever on your sponsorship, they want you to be whiter than white. And in America, I was talking to my girlfriend today, I said in the States, adultery is, they class that as really offensive to society.
Yeah.
And I said to her, well, the French, they don't worry about it. They can care less. But Americans are quite, that's one of the things that they don't like. So, so as soon as you start going down that road, you're going to alienate a lot of big businesses. And obviously then, you know, who's going to want their brand associated with someone that's a bit shady?
Well, of course, you know, okay, you know, not, I mean, not just the game, but, you know, Nike went the same route, didn't they? They've kind of sponsored McIlroy now, and I guess he's getting all the Benjamins, you know, from that. But anything else, mate? What else have you been hooking up? I'm guessing that these games we're talking about, not guessing, I kind of know they are, because I've seen what, you know, I've seen on the Xbox kind of what you've been up to, but these are on the Xbox One, aren't they?
They are indeed. I played, I've nearly platinumed that Rocket League on the PS4.
See, I'm enjoying that
game with the cars.
Oh, I think that's really good.
Yeah. It's satisfying when you score on it, because it's quite a quite an immense hit and miss whether you're going to score or not.
I remember seeing an episode of Top Gear where they were doing this, and it was the James May and Richard Hammond and Jeremy Clarkson against three. Was it the German presenters or the German Top Gear?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, and I think I wonder whether they nicked that idea off Top Gear.
Yeah, that's when I saw it. I thought, hang on a minute, I'm sure I've seen this before somewhere, and now I remember where it's from.
I'm going to make this video game about opening random boxes. What do you reckon?
Yeah, if you can get a middle-aged, well, I say middle-aged, an elderly gentleman. Yeah, maybe a giant fat guy with
a telephone.
A giant fat guy with yellow spots that keeps falling over.
You could plug your telephone and your mobile into your, plug your actual house phone into your Xbox or PlayStation, and it starts ringing.
Yeah, I see where you're going. There's some dodgy guy on the phone. Maybe Tiger Woods offering you money. Anyway, I digress.
Yeah.
Have you been doing most of your gaming on the Xbox One this week, mate, or has it been split?
I'm a bit disappointed because I was looking at my Vita and my 3DS the other day, and I just haven't really done anything with them for a while. So I don't know. I think when you're at home, getting rid of them.
Yeah, I think when you're at home, they become a little bit redundant, don't they? Because when you're at home, you can just pop you pop your home console on. You've got your controller. You've got a big screen there. You've got more control, better graphics. That's obviously the way that you would go. Whereas the handhelds are more, if you're commuting or you're going away or whatever, traveling, like a long train ride or something. That would be, the ideal sort of scenario to really play on them. So, I feel your pain a little bit in that, in that regard, mate. I mean, I'll commute to work each day, sort of the kind of the round journey, I guess, there and back, probably somewhere in the region of about an hour and a half a day, and then 45 minutes kind of middle of the day for lunch as well. So yeah. I've got kind of ample opportunity there to kind of whip out the Vita, whip out the 3DS, and have a blast. And it's something I do regularly, especially with the Vita, more so than the DS. I don't know what it is. I feel a little awkward pulling the 3DS out on the bus. You get a few sort of dodgy looks, as if you've stole it from a child.
Yeah.
Whereas the Vita feels a bit more kind of grown up when you're playing that on the go. But I see where you're coming from there.
I completed. Hang on. Quick pause, I'll edit this bit out. I did finish Mortal Kombat 10. The story mode. Yeah. I unlocked. The thing that bugs me about that game and about the fighting game is the fact that there's no characters to unlock apart from the final boss that you fight.
Yeah.
Who I can't remember. Shokan or something. Anyway. You unlock him at the end. I don't know. I'm not getting on with the controls because when you enter the combos, it gives you really ridiculous reaction time to get them all in to register.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was doing a tutorial because I thought, well, that's fine. If I can't do it, I'll just keep practicing. But yeah. It's just like. You're having to roll the D-pad, and as you'll know, the D-pads and the diagonal is probably the worst thing about the D-pad on controllers.
Yeah, definitely.
So it's quite difficult to get into the rhythm of it. But I do like the way that you can't button mash with Mortal Kombat. That's the only frustrating thing. Is you can't do panic combat where someone's laying into you. It looks simple, but it's really in depth. If you do, you've got all these extended counters and stuff. When someone does like a super move on you, you can block it and you can counter out of it. But it's really difficult to pull off.
But time and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, I love fighting. I mean, the guys that write the code for that must be, because they've got to think counters for everything, haven't they? So. it becomes quite complicated. You know, you've got 30 fighters and you've got to make each one be balanced with the other. You know, can't make one overpowered against all the others.
I think it's a bit of a fine balancing act, isn't it? I know that, you know, in fighting games in the past, you know, patches have been released. What one am I thinking of? Marvel versus Capcom 3. You know, they released sort of, you know, a few patches for that because there were particular characters that, you know, were seen as, you know, really kind of OP. You know, they were the kind of sort of go-to characters for anybody that played online, and if you use those characters, it was going to be very difficult for, you know, anyone that was using, you know, one of the other characters to sort of stand a chance with you. So they do have to kind of balance it, but you know, I agree with you. It's some job. Although some of these games franchises have been going for, you know, absolutely donkey's years now, and it wouldn't surprise me if they still use kind of base code from you know the first game that came out, and they've just sort of advanced it, you know, with the kind of later, you know, incarnations or whatever. But yeah, Mortal Kombat. I still haven't done the story mode myself yet. I'm kind of chipping away, I guess, every kind of now and again with it. It's very difficult. I can't really play, can't really get away with playing that around the kids, mate. It's a little bit dodgy.
Well, you're going to sort of pull someone's heart out of their chest.
Yeah. Oh, Daddy, what's that? It's go to bed.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't really do it.
I did. Yeah. So that's been about it. I mean, I don't know. It some weeks, you know, you get like, well, you can just get into a game, one game specifically, and then some weeks I'm a bit kind of patchy, I kind of pick around, right? You know, I've still got a few things on the go. I've got Batman on the go, I've got The Witcher on the go, you know, but Batman's not that long. I think it's only about 12 hours. Witcher, you're looking at, well, it's probably 50 or 60 just for the main story.
Yeah,
but, you know, I wouldn't say Batman. I like Batman, but it's not as... After playing The Witcher, it feels a bit shallow. Because it's obviously like not an in-depth game, but there's been... I'm more interested at the moment about reading some of the backlash between the PC port, which I picked up for £12.50 for the full game, plus some DLC on Steam.
Bargain.
And that's not going to be fixed until autumn. Which is shocking for PC people.
It is. That's a long time to wait, and it's, you know, if you've not bought that, I mean, you know, getting that at the price you did, you know, that's a good deal. However, if it's a game that's kind of, you know, kind of broken, and you're gonna have to wait until August, yeah, you know, it stings a little bit. If you'd have paid full price for that,
it's really hurting the reputation of the pre-purchasing anything, because if a big company like Rocksteady or Warner Brothers can do that, then, don't know. I mean, it's possible for any. You know, is that a culture that we're going to get into? Sloppy, you know, sloppy products being delivered and patched up later on. So,
wow. I mean, mate. I mean, if we just have a little look back at the past 12 months, you know, you've got Drive Club, you've got Assassin's Creed Unity, you know, two really big offenders for that last year. So, you know, it is a bit of a trend. I mean, this has probably been the first one, albeit, you know, it's PC, whereas the other two games I was talking about there were console, you know, console games. But even still, you can't get away with that. If you're expecting people to pay up front, in some cases pre-order, which is you know, something we'll get onto in a little while, that's a massive kick in the head. Massive. You can't get away with that. It's false advertising. I mean, you're making a product, you are selling that product, and the person that's buying that is expecting something. And if what they get is kind of broken, you're being missold that. That's got to be, you know, breaching kind of the Sale of Goods Act or something, surely. But
Steam are doing refunds now, which they've kind of been really shoved into the corner of doing it, really, because the EU is basically selling on. You can't just sell in the European market and just make up the rules as you go along. So the EU has done something good in that way. But the problem is now for me is I think we're moving away from pre-order where you don't have to put any money down to this sort of pre-purchase system almost, where, you know, you but like which is early access, isn't it, really? It's pre-purchase.
And it's dangerous because, yeah, it's, you've kind of pointed out in that one sort of instance there, we had the couple of things from last year as well, in that if you're partnering with your hard earned before you've actually sort of seen the product or the, you know, you, for me, you're opening yourself up to being, in my opinion, ripped off. You know, they're going to take your money, you're getting, you know, half a game, a broken game. It's wrong.
I mean, I wouldn't call carte blanche over that, because I mean, Elite Dangerous was brilliant. It cost you know, quite a, it was a gamble, but it was a quality product. And the reason they needed support from their punters early is because they weren't publishing with a big publisher.
So yeah, I mean, in that regard.
So,
yeah, I mean, in that regard, I mean, that's, you know, that's kind of almost sort of the exception there to the rule, in that what they're doing is they're asking for people to sort of pay up front, because, you know, to avoid sort of going through one of these major publishers or whatever the reason was, but avoiding the big boys, big boys, so to speak. So you look at kind of you know, Ubisoft sort of last year with, you know, Assassin's Creed. That had a massive backlash last year, didn't it?
Yeah,
massive.
It did, yeah.
And the same came, okay, probably not to the same extent, but so did Drive Club. I know that kind of at the time when, you know, we were sort of talking about you'd already bought it, and then, you know, I then got it. But we, you know, you'd sort of said as we were speaking, you know, that there were sort of patches in the, you know, in the pipeline, so to speak.
Yeah.
And that, you know, we kind of knew that this game was going to, you know, when it was, you know, finished, for want of a better phrase, sorry, that it was going to be good. You know, now that it is, you know, finished and, you know, kind of complete, I guess, you know, and it's had the patches and stuff, you know, you've got the dynamic kind of weather, you've got, you know, the nice lighting and the more cars and stuff, that's great. But at the time, you know, when they and you know, they did release it, it was a broken game. And that obviously that had other knock-on effects. You know, Sony had promised PS Plus subscribers, you know, like I guess a watered down version, the PS Plus version of Drive Club, and that's only just appeared on the stores. So,
yeah,
you know, they're treading on thin ice. I mean, gamers, I feel anyway, at least, you know, the ones that I know, the ones that I play with, the ones I speak to, you know, they're a loyal bunch. You know, people have got their brand loyalties. They, you know, they will buy games year in, year out, and they will back their developers and stuff. However, you know, you've only really got to look back. Okay, we're going to be going back a few years, but look at what happened with the whole Atari thing, when all of a sudden they started, you know, spitting out a load of shite. You know, the whole E.T. thing, and then it almost led to the collapse of video games. Mm. You know, what we don't want is for something, you know, as bad as that to happen again.
Yeah, I mean, well, when Atari first started up, they nearly got bankrupted by consoles. Never could have gone completely.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like any industry, it's not immune from market forces. And, you know, what you don't want to do as well is this whole culture of giving you 60% of a game and then selling the other 40% off to you as season pass or DLC to come later on, you know, to get a faster turnaround on releasing a full title.
It's naughty. And
it's crazy.
It's really something.
You compare that with someone like Blizzard, and they take 2 years to make an expansion.
Yeah.
So, you know, some people turn around a full... I think Bloodborne was only made in just over a year.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
I think maybe, you know, I guess I feel a little bit blessed in that, you know, when I really got into gaming back in the days when, you know, cartridges and stuff like that, when you bought a game, that, you know, that was your game. You know, that's, you know, that's what you got. And, you know, everything that, you know, we were talking about fighters, you know, fighting games earlier on, and you'd only unlock like the boss. You know, back in the day, you know, when you were playing sort of Street Fighter or whatever, and then you, you know, you would unlock the, Street Fighter Turbo or whatever, and you would unlock more kind of more characters, and you just don't get that anymore. Now it's all like the microtransactions. Okay, the characters are actually on the disc. It's just that you need to that disc locked content that we spoke about before on the show, and it's taking us all for mugs, guys. I mean, I think. Yeah, well, no, we're probably going off on a bit of a tangent here, but, you know, how long do us as gamers, you know, we as a collective sort of pool of resources that these companies are trying to sort of suck our money from, how long are we going to put up with this for? I mean, I personally now, you know, if I do get a game, okay, most recently it was Mortal Kombat 10 or X, whatever. And I knew that there was going to be this kind of thing where you could buy the Predator, you could buy Jason Voorhees, you could buy costumes and stuff. Okay, you don't have to do that, but you still got a lot on the core game. If you look at something then like Dead or Alive, which, you know, is one of these kind of, now what would you call them, kind of like a freemium game, I guess, where you can download it. However, if you want to buy the other characters for that game, it's going to set you back another 30 or 40 quid. It's ridiculous.
It is a mental business model, but it must work, otherwise they wouldn't do it.
Well, it's true. You know, there are people out there that are buying, people out there that are pre-ordering, pre-purchasing, you know, buying the Dislock content. It's crazy. But
the only other entertainment industry I can compare it to is football.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, the fans that are loyal to their club, or, you know, whether it's, you know, like PlayStation or whatever, they just, you know, want more money all the time for basically the same thing year in, year out. That's what it comes down to. And also, if you've come from the PC environment, you're used to getting a lot of stuff for no money that they charge for on Xbox and on PlayStation. Like the whole mod scene just doesn't exist on the console.
No.
Fallout 4 is going to change that, which is a good move. And hopefully that'll push it in the right direction.
I was reading something about that you're going to be able to use kind of you're able to use like PC mods on Fallout 4? Is that something?
Similar. But what they've done is they've made a engine that you can actually create your own levels and distribute them amongst your friends. You know, I'm sure there'll be publisher content that you'll be able to download and buy, but, you know, they're like with Skyrim on the PC, you can mod the hell out of it, really, basically. So, but they're going to allow that on the consoles versions, which is, I don't think something there's new. Any other game that does that at the moment. So,
no, so that's good. I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to that game.
So you're going to get your money's worth with that one.
For a change, or at least that's how it seems at the minute.
Well, I mean, if you want a game to have longevity, then you've got to build a community around it. But then
you do. You need that support long term, don't you?
If you give the community the tools to create their own content, then you know, a game, for example, Diablo 2. I think that was running for like 10 years or more.
Yeah.
You know, so, and they could have done that with games like Destiny, but they decided to go down the route of, you know, penny pinch everybody. So sad, but
jumped on the bandwagon, didn't they? Everyone's doing it, so why aren't we, kind of thing. All right then, mate. Well, last week we asked you to, you know, tweet in, give us some questions, and a few of you out there were kind enough to kind of answer our calls and send us in some questions. So we're going to go through a couple of those just now. It's been a bit of a sad week. I mean, it sort of lends itself to one of these questions. Really, it's been a sad week. The president of Nintendo died this week, age 55. You know, bit of a shock to the gaming world.
Yeah.
I sort of logged into Twitter the other morning and saw that.
That was a weird one, wasn't it?
Yeah. I work in healthcare, and you know that 55 is kind of no age. So, but yes. I think it's pronounced Sony Boy. The way he's kind of sort of spout it, I apologise, mate, if I've got that wrong, but I'm going to say Sony Boy. So he's put in AYB podcast. It's got to be Nintendo fave games because, you know, RIP Iwata. So Nintendo for me has always been a bit of a staple of gaming, really. I mean, when I first started gaming, it was on, well, sort of gaming, serious sort of console gaming was on the NES, I guess. And, you know, I've had sort of the various kind of consoles through the years. I've got a 3DS, a 2DS, and an N64, and a Wii as well somewhere in the house at the minute. Oh, and a Game Boy Micro as well. For me, fave Nintendo, it's got games, but I'm going to pick a cartridge, really. And I've mentioned this on the show before. For me, it's got to be Super Mario All-Stars, just because of those collection of games. some of the best sort of platforming games, and I think they still hold up pretty well today, actually. But in my opinion, of all time, you know, the first Mario Brothers game, Mario Brothers 3, and then you had Super Mario World as well. So I remember getting that with my Super Nintendo way back when. Played it since around at one of the, you know, friends of the show, Tickle the Pink. He got his SNES out a few months ago now. We had a little blast on that, and it was still as fun as ever. But how about yourself, John? What's been your kind of? Have you got any favourite Nintendo games? Not just.
I won't do my Sonic the Hedgehog gag.
Yeah, Sonic.
It's gonna be Zelda, and that's not the character from Terrorhawks.
Okay,
that's something completely different. But yeah, I mean, yeah. Zelda, because the first time I saw. The Zelda running on the N64 is what made me aware of Ocarina of Time. That was the game, yeah, really, that made me want an N64 along with GoldenEye.
It's a brilliant game. Absolutely brilliant game.
That was, it just looked amazing at the time, and just loved the whole idea of it. And yeah, I played that quite a lot. And Zelda Wind Waker on the GameCube. Was it on the GameCube?
Yeah, the Wind Waker was, yeah.
That one was a fantastic game. I really enjoyed that. Never been a mad fan of Mario.
See, I've got a bit of a thing for him, and it's not just all, you know, little Italian plumbers with moustaches.
Yeah.
You know, me and Mario go back, you know, from to back in the days, and yeah, I think, you know, platform games and Mario, for me, that's sort of synonymous with gaming.
I was more going back to Sonic on the Mega Drive.
Yeah, well, at the time, I was kind of playing them both. Yeah, and Sonic, you know, again, was a fantastic game. But like, just to touch on now about the GameCube, that was a really underrated console, man. You know, it was kind of out at the same time as, you know, the PS2 and the original Xbox. And I think it kind of slipped under a lot of people's radars. I think, you know, they thought it was a little bit of a kid's system. I really enjoyed that system.
Yeah, and then you had things like the Metroid series on it.
Yeah.
I think that's when all the Sky Fox and all that kind of started.
Yeah, you had Super Smash Brothers. That wasn't Brawl. It was, I can't think of which one it was now, but the Smash Brothers game, and those little tiny discs that the games used to come on as well. That was crazy.
Yeah,
wasn't
the
it?
Little mini CD things.
Yeah, really, really weird.
I haven't got a Wii U, but I've played the zombie game on the Wii U. On
the Resident Evil one.
No, there's the zombie one. I can't remember what it's called, which is set in London.
Okay.
There's that one, and also they did a game called Hyrule Warriors, which is kind of like a Dynasty Warriors, but with all the Zelda characters. And I've played Super Smash Brothers and things like that. So Mario Kart, I've had a go on. I mean, they're all great games, and I love the colour palette that Nintendo tend to use for most of their stuff. It's just really bold, bright, fun, you know. And with Nintendo, a lot of it's about gameplay. Which is something that's missing from a lot of mainstream console games sometimes. So
yeah, I think
they've almost created their own market.
Yeah, and I think kind of, you know, what they did is they've not tried to compete with, you know, they've let Sony and Microsoft, or, you know, whoever, you know, the big boy, you know, Sega and whatever. You know, they've let them kind of do their own thing, and certainly with kind of the last generation and this generation, and probably the ones, you know, slightly before that with the original Xbox, PS2 and stuff, is that they've kind of let them kind of battle it out amongst themselves, and Nintendo have just carried on doing what they've always done, which is, you know, sort of push out really good games. And I guess, you know, that's what it's about, really, isn't it? It's about the games.
I mean, the only criticism I've for Nintendo is they do tend to stick to tried and tested a little bit too much sometimes, in terms of their, you know, in terms of the titles that they put out. I mean, they struggle to get third party content on the Wii U. They have shoved things like Call of Duty on there, but, you know, it's all kind of like a half-hearted effort, really. It's almost like Nintendo haven't really got that much interest in third party, but they think, or we better put something on there just to, you know, to keep up, widen the appeal of it a little bit more. But
yeah, yeah.
So yeah, that's Nintendo for me. I'll be honest, I'm not a massive Nintendo nut or anything, so
yeah.
I do remember that when the N64 came out, I think that I'm pretty sure some of the cartridges were nearly £60 then.
Yeah, I mean, even the imports, for the SNES they were, mate. Stuff.
Yeah,
for the Super Nintendo, I remember, you know, my mum and dad, one Christmas, you know, me and my brother went into game, and you know, my dad having to hand over £250 because we'd got these five games on our kind of Christmas list that we wanted. So yeah, £50 a pop, and you're talking about some games that were over pretty quickly. I mean, one of those was kind of, now bear in mind, mate, I was kind of, you know, 11 or 12 at the time, but Disney's Aladdin was on there. Finished that in like a day, and there was no replay value to that whatsoever. So
no,
Nintendo aren't, you know, they've turned their hand at these little amiibo things and stuff. Yeah. You know, they're kind of branching into the, you know, they're sort of touching on the dark side of kind of gaming now. But
yeah,
there you go, then, Sony boy.
They're trying to move on to the get into the Disney Infinity and the sort of Skylanders market, aren't they? So.
Yeah, yeah, they're kind of we'll grab all your kind of money that we can. So. I hope that's answered your question there, Sony boy. We've kind of mentioned a couple of the Nintendo games there, and very sad news this week. As I mentioned, we've got a couple more questions. I'm just kind of having a little browse on the old Twitter now. One of them was a little bit longer than the, well, I know we're going to sort of talk about it a little bit longer than the others, but Benton Destruction at Benton Strife asks, at AWOB podcast, pre-orders a good thing or the work of the devil? Now, I think we've probably touched on that. Well, we've done more than touch on it, actually. You know, we've spoke about that already, in that, is it a good thing or is it a bad thing, this whole pre-order thing? In my opinion, it's a bad thing. I think, you know, you mentioned, you know, before that, you know, there are instances where what you're doing is you're helping the developer to be able to kind of bring that game to the masses. But pre-ordering kind of as a whole, I think, is a bit redundant now. The amount of copies of these games that, you know, people are, you know, the companies are making, the fact that you've got access to these things 24/7, you know, you can download it from your phone and it's sitting there waiting on your console when you get home, I think it's absolute, you know, I think it's bollocks, to be honest. I don't think you need to do it at all. You know, if you could pop to Tesco, Sainsbury's, Asda, Morrison's, Argos, you've got so many places now where you can buy these games from. It doesn't even need to be, you know, like a gaming outlet now. You can almost pick it up almost anywhere, really. So for me, I think it's a kind of a moot point. I don't feel it's warranted at all. How about yourself, John?
I'm in two minds. I think if you want to, from an investor's point of view, so they do these investor calls, don't they, where they can say, look, you know, we have got a guaranteed sales figure. We can predict what we're going to sell. So,
yeah,
you know, we've got 3 million pre-orders for, say, like Grand Theft Auto. Then they can use that argument to get the funding that they need to actually complete the game. Is it necessary? I mean, Grand Theft Auto, do you really need to pre-order that? I mean, they from the company's point of view, they know they're going to sell loads of copies of that anyway. Pre-order, it seems to have moved towards pre-purchase now rather than pre-order. So, you know, pre-order used to be stick a fiver on down at game, or just pre-order it without putting any money down. And because of the price increase on games, they're now asking you to put a fiver on. The only thing I can think is pre-ordering is useful when you're going to buy digital content and you want to pre-load it. Because that obviously saves on server, the stress of the servers all going down on the same day while everyone tries to download their copy of the game.
You can get it a bit sooner than, you know, maybe you would. Well, you can get it sooner than you would.
PC gamers have been preloading stuff on Steam for years, so they're kind of used to it, whereas the console guys who used to actually going in the shop picking up a physical disc, it's kind of a new concept to get their head round. So, but you know, when you're, I don't know, it's difficult. There's been so many problems with games that are AAA, supposed to have been tested, supposed to have been, you know, spent years in development, and they're not up to scratch for, say, the PC, or for the console. I'm thinking of The Witcher there, because The Witcher on the PC, because you can obviously dial down the settings, you could get a good 60 frames a second. Well, it's struggling to hit 30 on the console, and that does impact on the experience slightly. So, yeah, I'm all for pre-order, because, as you say, it does bring games to market that might not necessarily have been able to get there on their own Steam. So I'm in two minds, really. I'm kind of used to it now, so it doesn't worry me, but I don't pre-order as much as I used to, put it that way.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't done it for a little while, so...
I mean, Fallout 4 I would pre-order, for example. But that's only because I know that they will have to... it's got a lot of Oblivion games I will pre-order, because I know that they will be delivered to a certain standard, I hope, or based on their track record. I've even hesitated on pre-ordering Battlefield, because I'm not sure whether that's going to be, you know, what they've shown of the game is only a small snippet. Doesn't reflect the overall quality of the finished product, does it really? So.
Yeah, I mean, that's something they do as well, isn't it? You get like the little taste of whether they're sort of showing you the best sort of 5 minutes of the game, and then when you get it, you know, it's a bit of a letdown. So,
yeah.
Again, is that kind of false advertising? Maybe
rein in your expectations. That's what I say.
Yeah. Where's the next one? How many is that? That's three we've done, isn't it? I'm sure we've got another one.
Yeah.
While I'm just searching for this, in fact, I've actually found the question, but it leads on to what I was going to talk about. As I sort of mentioned on last week's show, guys, having a little lie down. I've been threatening to do it for a while, and that is I've parted with my hard earn this week, and I've picked myself up an Xbox One. Now, the guys and girls that follow us on Twitter will know. You know, I've been putting pictures up and things like that, and some comments. And I've got to say, I am enjoying the experience of it so far. However, did have a couple of issues when setting the system up initially. Speaking with John about this kind of off-air, and you know, if you kind of follow our sort of Twitter feed, you'll have seen my kind of comments on there last night. So, set the system up. And you know, as you do when you're going through kind of the initial setup, it's asking for email addresses and passwords, blah 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 blah. We get to the point where you know, it's sort of saying, you know, do you want to go to the, just log in and go to the dashboard? And I'm thinking, this is all a bit strange, because it hasn't actually asked me at the minute what it wants my gamer tag to be. So, you know, I thought I'd go with it, because at some point I was going to be able to sort of change it. And so up in the top corner it says Tom and Bella, and that's two of my kids, and their names are up in the top corner, and I'm thinking, that's really, really weird. Well, how does it know that? So I've gone into the settings and tried to sort of change it, and it's asking me for £7.99 to do that, which was, I thought, really, really weird, because, yeah, I know, right? It's, I felt like I'd been sort of bent over big time there. Yeah, bent over big time, because I mean, it says actually on the website, which I eventually went on to kind of, you know, contact Microsoft, that you're able to actually do it, you know, one time, because the console will generate, if it's a new account and you're using a new email address or whatever, the console will generate a username for you, which you are then able to change at no charge, only one time. Anyway, if for whatever reason the console hadn't done that, and it'd give me this name or these names, I ended up spending 2.5 hours, maybe a tad more, via this kind of computer chat with this guy from Microsoft. And an absolute ball ache, mate. And so, what actually, you know, it transpired that I ended up doing was I had to create a new email address, create a new account on the Xbox. The Xbox generated me a username, which I was then able to change for free. The guy from Microsoft, the engineer, whatever, he was unable to cancel my live subscription on the Tom and Bella account, and then transfer the 12 months live to the Jimmy Two Times account, which I created instead. However, what he wasn't able to do was the games that I'd registered with the Tom and Bella account are still on that account, so I can't delete that account, otherwise I will lose Forza 5, I will lose Max Curse of the Brotherhood, And there's also a £5 credit for the, you know, for the store sitting on there. So it wasn't a smooth setup. It certainly wasn't anywhere near as smooth as the PS4 one. I'm finding it feels a little laggy in comparison to the PS4. And something that you'd mentioned earlier about the kind of what was it again? It was about the like a new dashboard.
Xbox preview, the dashboard preview.
Yeah, that's hopefully, you know, I'll get onto that. I'll kind of sign up to that a bit later on this evening, and then that should hopefully iron out any kind of creases that we've got going on there. But overall, the experience has been quite good. Although I say quite good, I do kind of feel at the minute that it feels a little clunky in comparison to the PS4. I know it's probably going to sound a bit biased. I mean, you know, this show predominantly has been about the sort of, you know, PS4, you know, since we started, because that's really the consoles that we were kind of playing on at that time. But now with the kind of myself with the Xbox One, John's obviously got an Xbox One as well. You know, hopefully we're going to become, you know, it's going to be a kind of more rounded experience as a show, and we want to, get you guys involved as well. And I think maybe before just talking about PS4, we were maybe alienating a lot of you guys that play on Xbox. So, features wise, it feels quite good. I like the snap feature. I like you're able to pin things to the to your kind of home screen, you know, games and apps and stuff. I kind of like that. But I've not been a big Windows user for a while. I mean, I've had a Mac for about 8 months, and since I've had that, I've not been using a PC. So, and even then, I was running Windows Vista. So, I wasn't using like the new kind of any of the new Windows with the tiles and stuff. Which I guess, you know, this is meant to kind of replicate a little bit. But
I'll just pick you up there. It's a different experience to Windows 10.
Okay.
What they've really done is they've made it so that it's going to link up better with the Xbox One and with the Windows Phone. So they tried to make it like a, you know, an expanded system, but it doesn't really represent what the PC version of Windows 10 is like. It's still very, but it has got, you know, it has got, you can split desktop views and things like that in Windows 10, which is pretty cool. Also, you'll be able to, if you've got an iPad. Not an iPad, sorry.
Yeah.
If you've got, say, like a Microsoft Surface, or you've got a laptop running Windows 10, you can then cast it stuff onto the screen through your Xbox. I know you can do that through a smart TV, but not everybody's got a smart TV. It just means that, you know, you don't have to go and buy a separate, you know, little dongle.
It gives people like another access option, doesn't it? I mean, there are certain things I do like about it. I mean, the pad, so yeah, it feels really, really comfortable. I like the layout of the buttons. I mean, I've always liked the kind of layout of the Xbox controllers with the offset sort of thumbsticks and stuff, and the triggers as well. You know, the kind of rear triggers have always very nice. And, you know, as you'd mentioned before, there is a little bit of feedback there. That, you know, and you were right. It was really kind of difficult to explain. You know, when we were talking about that last week, it feels nice when I've been playing kind of Forza, you know, to kind of rev of the engine as you're kind of sort of screaming around the corner. If you know, if your wheels are kind of juddering across, you'll get a sense of that through this kind of feedback through the triggers. So that's really, really nice. Something else I'm impressed about is the amount of kind of peripherals that we've got available for the system. Okay, you've got, you know, your pads and you've got the Kinect, but there are a lot of other little, you know, nice little touches. You've got the stereo headset adapter. Some people might say, okay, well, that's a bit of an omission. You know, Sony's got a 3.5mm jack on the DualShock 4, but okay, the fact that it's not there, but you can alter that. You know, I like that. I like my gadgets. You know, the media remote. You know, you've got what else? There's a TV tuner. So yeah, I mean, I, as a complete system, I really am liking it. I mean, I've moved my PS4 upstairs now for the kids to have a bit of a play on for this week, just while I kind of get my head down and really crack on with sort of learning the system and finding out, you know, kind of just kind of what little kind of little secrets it holds. But, you know, so far so good, and I think, you know, I got it at a decent price, and you know, although I say I got it at a decent price, the wife still wasn't really happy. Apparently, it's another gadget. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, first question was, are you going to get Destiny on that thing? I didn't answer.
Could actually say to her, well, perhaps I'll get into golf, and you're looking at what, 400 quid for a stick? There's plenty of more sports and hobbies that are more expensive than gaming overall.
Yeah, drinking, for instance, I could become an alcoholic, and then
recommend that, mate.
Where would we be then? But that leads on to the final question that we were asked this week, which was sent in by the Order of Ortega. Now, he's been sort of following the show. He's been quite interactive with us on Twitter since we started, really. So I think this might be one of the first questions we've read out. Where did I get ridden from? First question that we have read out from him. But he asks, at AYB Podcast, what's the five best games to get on Xbox One? Now, John, I'm going to have to hand this over to you, mate, because as things stand, I own three games on the Xbox One, and I've only played one of them. So, over to you, mate. What would your recommendations be?
Definitely Forza. So you can go for Forza Horizon, which is the open world of sort of street racing version of Forza, which is more the track cars. Games are excellent, even though Forza 5 was launch title and it's like 2013, so it's a couple of years old now. It still looks absolutely fantastic and it's really, really easy to play.
Something that I really like about that is the fact that you've got Jezza Clarkson on there. There's some Top Gear content. You can race on the Top Gear track. I know you've been able to do that on Gran Turismo before, but it's nice to. In fact, it's got a bit of a Gran Turismo feel to it.
After what's happened,
yeah, I suppose. But it has got a bit of a Gran Turismo feel to it, and I think I like that. Having not really played a Forza game for many years, but still, sort of carried on with Gran Turismo, it still feels really familiar.
Yeah, I mean, with the Gran Turismo comparison, I can understand, but it doesn't have like. It's really difficult. How many cars do you really need to drive in a game? And I mean, Gran Turismo does have a lot of cars that I wouldn't really care to drive. Shoved in there. So I mean, they're trying to with Forza, it's more focused on the big luxury providers, and you can drive minis and all that sort of stuff if you want to. But I think Gran Turismo tends to attract the gearheads that want to fine tune a Vauxhall Astra from 1996 or something, and tune it up and everything. So it's more, they're more focused towards that. I mean, Forza does all that tuning stuff if that's what you're really into, but it doesn't force it on you in the way you can be competitive without ever changing any of the settings. But in terms of how the car handles and stuff, you don't need to know about mechanics to play it. So that's Forza. Sunset Overdrive, which I know that you've looked at, which is I've got a free 10 hours of that, and I've played some of the campaign, and I really like that game. It's crazy. I can't explain it. It's a mixture between Crackdown and Team Fortress 2 on rockets. It's kind of weird. I can't explain it. You're in a city, it's open world, you run around. People have been given these kind of corrupted energy drinks to drink, and they turn into these monsters and they go on the rampage. So the only other game I can think of is Prototype. Did you ever play that one?
No, I remember seeing it.
EA one.
Yeah, and I remember one of the guys that works in the corner shop around the corner. He's on my friends list for PSN. He'd mentioned about Prototype to me. I never actually got around to playing it.
So that's that one. That's a really hard one to. I mean, just go on YouTube, guys, and have a look at it. I mean, there's loads and loads of people have played it and love it. So.
Yeah. Something that game reminded me of was it reminded me a lot of when that came out. I was playing a lot of Infamous Second Son, and I think just kind of how the kind of character moves, And you know the kind of world that it—not the world it's set in, but I guess kind of how you kind of are able to kind of move around the world. It just reminded me a bit of Infamous Second Son. However, Infamous Second Son, if it had maybe eaten some, you know, mushrooms,
yeah,
or something like that, Infamous very trippy.
Doesn't have the gameplay that. Well, that's controversial. I mean, it's what you like, Corinne. It's really difficult to say what are the best games. It's like, well, what do you like? You know, that's basically the answer. Do you like running around, you know, sliding on rails, firing a gun that fires, I don't know, orange bombs at monsters? Or do you want to, I don't know, jump around, climb up buildings through drain pipes in smoke as an Infamous? It's all kind of weird, but... You know, it's all similar style of the game. It's just different take on it.
Yeah, yeah, but it's definitely one that I'm going to be looking to pick up this week. And
the only other ones I'm going to give you are the Halo Master Chief Edition, which is, well, it's a no-brainer. Yeah. It's four Master Chief Halo games for £23.
Yeah, I mean, again, just off air, just before we started recording, we were sort of talking and stuff, and we were both on Amazon at the time, and at the minute, Amazon are doing that collection for £22. Now, boys and girls, if you do not own that disc and you've got an Xbox One, what are you doing? You need to get on there, get it in your basket, and get it bought. £22 for all that content, you ain't going to get a deal like that. You are not. Not this side of Black Friday. I can guarantee it. £22 is a bargain.
Yeah. And you know, even... It's quite funny because obviously they're also later in the year, well, in August, they're rebooting Gears of War 1, but they're doing an upgraded, like an HD remaster. So that's going to be, I think that's probably going to be around the £20 price mark as well, but that's just for one game, I know. But I mean, that's huge because Gears is one of the games that made 360 so popular. So that's something I'm looking forward to personally. And the last thing I'd say is EA Access, which isn't a game, but it's access to EA's back catalogue of games.
See, I really like this as a service. I think I when I first heard about it was on another podcast, not your other podcast, but one that I know that we probably both listen to. Another rival. And you know, the guys on there were kind of talking about it. This was before it actually launched, but I mean, something I want to sign myself up to. I do like EA games for my sins. You know, I've been sort of bitten by the FIFA bug every year since kind of 2009, I think.
Yeah.
But the fact that it gives you kind of access to all these kind of diverse, not just sports games, but you do have, you know, the likes on there of sort of Plants vs Zombies Garden Warfare, which is fantastic. You've got there was something else that you mentioned earlier, that Battlefield, there we go, you know, there are kind of a Titanfall, so you've got access to sort of a lot of sort of different sort of styles of games, and for, is it £20 a year?
I think so.
I mean, that's fantastic. I mean, the thing is with these games is that, you know, after a year, you'd probably get rid of them anyway, because they bring different versions out each year, especially with things like FIFA and
Need
NHL.
Need for Speed. They're all franchises, aren't they?
Yeah, they pop a new one out every year. So, you know, rather than going out and spending £50 a time on a, you know, on the disc, let's say it is £20 a year to kind of have access to all these games. I think that's really good, and you know, that's up there with the Master Chief as sort of bargain wise. I think that's great.
And also, it's worth mentioning that with that on Xbox, you also get 10-hour demos of the, like, trials of some of the latest EA games that aren't in the vault yet.
Yeah.
So I can see what they're going to do. After, say, this time next year, you're going to have FIFA 16 in the vault. So if you don't mind waiting for 7 or 8 months or 6 months, you know, because you're still playing FIFA 15 and you're not desperate to play the next one. Yeah. You know, and then you can, you know, if you want to keep it afterwards, you know, they'll let you have a digital copy at a discount price. I mean, it's cheaper than, well, it's much cheaper than renting.
Yeah, what I think as well is that with the, I mean, it's something we spoke about earlier on in, you know, kind of earlier on in the week, which I was kind of interested to find out, was that with these kind of demos that, well, I say they're not really demos, are they? You've got access for 10 hours. So it's, yeah, you've got access to the full game for 10 hours. And with that, you're actually still able to sort of earn achievements, you know, gamer score,
yeah,
whilst you're doing this kind of 10 hours, which is brilliant. And that's another thing.
I mean, most people know after about 3 or 4 hours whether they like a game or whether it's going to grab them all. You know, or it might be a game that you've tried and couldn't get into, but then after a few hours it starts to grow on you. So, you know, not every game...
Exactly.
Some games are instant satisfaction, some games take a bit of hard work to get to the good stuff, but...
And you know, we've all been there where I did it last year with Call of Duty Advanced Warfare, that, you know, gone out and bought it, you know, paid up the readies to get day one, you know, get it on day one, and you know, I felt like I was burned. I really didn't enjoy it. I really couldn't get into it. Ended up selling it to kind of 3 days later. Okay, I traded it in towards, you know, Grand Theft Auto. I got a bit lucky there. But games, you know, suffer from sort of depreciation so quickly that as soon as you've left the store with it, it's already worth kind of half the price. So to be able to kind of, you know, put 10 hours into a game, you know, earn some trophies from it or some achievement, you know, get some gamer score, and then decide whether you actually want to buy it, I think it's, you know, fantastic. And I think, you know, Microsoft have really caught on something there. And I think, you know, PlayStation really... I know that there's this whole thing, you know, the Microsoft and EA have got a bit of a bromance going on, and you know, they've got their exclusive deals and content and stuff. But
you could argue Sony, that Activision have got that going with Sony at the moment.
Yeah, you could, and you know, yeah, with Destiny and stuff, and you know,
the fact they've taken the Call of, well, Microsoft have let them take the Call of Duty franchise sort of exclusivity off them, so you know the Black Ops 3, I mean, if that's a real system seller, you know, Sony are going to do quite nicely out of that, because you're going to get all that content on PlayStation first, you know, month ahead of the Xbox.
Yeah, I think we're going to see that with games across the systems, really, in that, you know, the relationships will change. And that, you know, one year you'll get exclusive content, you know, with one system, and then the next year, you know, it'll be with another.
Yeah.
And it's really about kind of what you enjoy playing, and as to kind of which way you go regarding your systems. But
poor old PC's just stuck in the middle of it all.
Well, yeah, but you know, PC, you can build to your own spec, and
yeah, true.
I mean, when you get your console, you're kind of buggered, aren't you? You're
stuck with whatever they provide, aren't they?
Whereas with PCs, you can kind of build to your heart's content, and you can dominate the world if you want.
Yeah.
But yeah, we haven't got to worry about that, mate, because we've got both consoles, ain't we? So you know.
And I've got a PC as well. So.
Yeah.
I don't know what Mac gaming's like. Is that still a thing?
Yeah. I mean, it's not too bad. I mean,
you can play World of Warcraft on a Mac. I know that. That's all I know.
Well, I like to sort of stick to the simple games. You know, I like Super Meat Boy and sort of Casual Crashers and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, I find it funny. I can use a DualShock 4 with it. I can use the 4, but I've got a 3 for it.
Are you excited about the Angry Birds 2 announcement?
I wouldn't say excited. I mean, don't get me wrong, I do... And I have enjoyed the Angry Birds games since the first one. We took the kids to Angry Birds Land last year, which was quite cool. I know, mate. I know. We had to pay, you know, we didn't really pay through the nose for it. It was fun.
But yeah, it's for kids.
It's for kids. Yeah, you know, we get sort of dragged along as their unfortunate parents. But it's going to be big. You know, a lot of people do like that. That kind of style of game, you know, you can sort of do it, you can kind of, you know, do it with one finger, really. It's mobile gaming at its best, I suppose, and also worst, because, you know, in my opinion, it doesn't really take, you know, kind of a lot of skill. It's quite, you know, it's accessible to a wide variety of people. You don't have to be, you know, an expert sort of sniper on kind of Call of Duty, or, you know, a top goal scorer in FIFA to be good at it. I mean, I guess, you know, they kind of went a bit bad, didn't they? Is it Rovio, is it? You know,
yeah,
with the whole sort of microtransactions.
Yeah, there's 14 Angry Birds games of different varieties.
Yeah,
so that
like
just
an
shows
book.
You how, I mean, it's like Minecraft, and it's just one of these. I think Minecraft has something like 3 billion downloads or something. It's like crazy. I mean, things like Candy Crush Saga on the phone, that's going to be even bigger, and also that's being bundled in with Windows 10 on release, which is kind of weird.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so, I mean, those sort of games, they're massive. And obviously your Lego games, I mean, there's loads of those as well, so...
Millions, mate, millions.
You know, you get something popular, right, you're going to make money out of it, aren't you?
Oh, you're going to milk it, mate. You're going to milk it.
And then you'll have 26 varieties of the same thing.
Yeah, I'll stick with vanilla.
Okay.
Right, mate. Well, listen, we're up to an hour there. So, what do you reckon? Call it a night on that one.
Yeah. Well, thanks for your questions, guys. I hope my answers were probably not as detailed as some of you'd like, but it's difficult because you're asking us what we like, and then what we like might not be what you like. So, it's kind of all subjective.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the way that you could tell us what you like is to get in touch with us on Twitter at see what I did there, very very sly. At AYB Podcast, or you can email us at AYBpodcast@gmail.com.
You can
get in touch with us as well. Myself at Jimmy Two Times on Twitter,
and I'm at Nefirian on Twitter as well, which Jim spelt wrongly in last week's episode, so apologies if you searched for me and couldn't find me, but if you just put NEPH you'll find me.
Yeah, that was my bad, mate, really sorry about that.
That's
alright then, guys. Well, until next week, thanks a lot for listening.
Cheerio.